This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Godless heathens and infidels and fans of Ursula K. Le Guin, this is Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we'll be talking with Ursula K. Le Guin, an unbeliever as well as a legendary fantasy and science fiction writer, later on today's show.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. Free Thought Radio is broadcasting over many Air America stations. It streams from airamerica.com. on weekends, and this show is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the National Organization of Atheists and Agnostics, who work primarily to keep state and church separate, which we talk a lot about on this show, but also just as strongly we work to educate the public about the views of non-believers.
So we'd like to start the show. We always like to start the show with a little humor, and there's been a little bit of a dry spell there, but we're getting some more irreverent jokes suggested by listeners. And what's your latest, Dan?
Well, I blew all my good jokes in the first 50 to 100 shows, and now, what are we, 180 or some now? And so listeners have been sending them in, and some of them we can't say on the radio, obviously, but they're funny. Thank you for sending those. But one came in a couple of weeks ago. Jesus walked into a hotel with three nails, and he said, "Can you put me up for the night?"
Well, okay, we'll see how the
all right, see
to
if that,
that
works. Coming up, as Annie Laurie told you, we're going to be talking with the great Ursula K. Le Guin, who will be receiving an Emperor Has No Clothes Award, which is the award that the Freedom From Religion Foundation gives to famous people who are candid about religion. We'll be giving her that award in the November convention, in early November, of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we'll have a sneak preview today.
And government prayer and activism against it by local freethinkers remains a hot issue around the country. We've been talking with activists about why they're protesting government prayer. And in a few minutes, we'll talk with a Colorado activist, a foundation member, who's been engaged in 2 years of protracted negotiations in Grand Junction, Colorado, with the city and county boards there.
And we'll also talk about the foundation's newest billboard posting in Grand Junction, Colorado. To send a message to City Hall to stop government prayer, we put up a red, white, and blue billboard last week. It's really pretty. We had one similar in Denver during the conventions. It pictures a Capitol dome with the words, "Keep religion out of government."
And before we get to that interview, we have a few odds and ends.
We're pleased to report that public outcry over the prospect that Americans would not be able to see the new feature film about Charles Darwin, which is called Creation, apparently that public outcry paid off. New Market Films recently acquired the U.S. rights to this movie. The movie focuses on Darwin and his family as he's finishing writing the book on the origin of species in the 1850s. The film stars a real-life couple, Paul Bettany and Academy Award-winning actress Jennifer Connelly, as Darwin and his wife Emma. The release is set for December, so that's a hopeful development and something that we all can look forward to.
And we also need to report that, the Foundation's lawsuit in federal court in New Hampshire challenging insertion of the words "under God" into our formerly secular Pledge of Allegiance was, unfortunately, dismissed in early October. We're taking that case with Michael Newdow, and you may remember he's the emergency room doctor who took the legal world by surprise in 2002 when the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with him and ruled in his favor that "under God" in public school pledges was unconstitutional.
And you might recall that the then 79-year-old Circuit Judge Alfred T. Goodwin, who was a Nixon court appointee, he famously wrote, quote, "A profession that we are a nation under God is identical to a profession that we are a nation under Jesus or a nation under Vishnu, a nation under Zeus, or a nation under no god, unquote. That historic ruling was vacated after the Supreme Court invalidated Michael Newdow's standing, but he went back to court in California with parent plaintiffs. He won at the federal district level, and the school district in California appealed to the Ninth Circuit again, where Newdow's case has been sitting for 2 years.
And also 2 years ago, with Mike, the foundation filed our challenge, a similar challenge, of a New Hampshire law requiring daily recitation of the Religious Pledge of Allegiance in public schools. And although the law allows students to opt out, they have to leave the room or stay seated or in some other way publicly distinguish themselves among their peers in an embarrassing manner. And they have to hear that pledge every day, which ties patriotism to godliness. So the local plaintiffs are a family with young children, three children in New Hampshire, who belong to the foundation.
And the good news is that we are appealing. Can we say that? We are appealing? Other people should say that, but we are appealing the lawsuit.
And we'll try to get Mike back on the show, and maybe we can talk to the family as well someday. They're very passionately committed to keeping our public schools secular, protecting their children from government-fostered religion, but they don't want their names to be used to protect their children.
And we can remind listeners that there's a lot more in-depth coverage of free thought and state separation in the Foundation's newspaper. It's called Free Thought Today. It comes out 10 times a year. The November issue is now available. There's a lot of color photographs of the billboard campaigns we've been describing and an interesting story by our editor, Bill Dunn, about a student who runs a book project for free-thinking prisoners. There's a new column called Meet a Member, an announcement that once again the foundation has qualified as a charity for the combined federal campaign, all kinds of state church updates.
So if you're part of the unmasked masses, there is now mass media for you in addition to this weekly radio show, a monthly newspaper full of topical articles.
So if you want a sample issue of Free Thought Today, telephone 1-800-335-4021 or go to our website at ffrf.org and click on the button that says Request a Complimentary Packet. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. You're listening to Free Thought Radio over Air America Radio. Coming up, Ursula K. Le Guin, and we'll talk with Colorado activist Ann Landman.
And next week, Donald C. Johansson will be our guest, the discoverer of Lucy, an atheist.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Coming up on the second half of Free Thought Radio, everyone's favorite science fiction writer, Ursula K. Le Guin, a feminist and an unbeliever.
And now we have on the phone with us from Grand Junction, Colorado, a local state church activist, Ann Landman. Ann is a member of the foundation. She works as a researcher and founded Western Colorado Atheists and Freethinkers in February 2007. And Ann, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And we've been working with you, I guess, since about last fall over your group's campaign to try to stop prayers to Jesus at city and county buildings, if not stopping prayer altogether. How did you first become aware of all this public piety by public officials?
Well, many years ago, I got involved in development issues here locally, and I started to attend city council meetings, and I was shocked when they came to the moment at the beginning of the meeting where they had everyone stand up for the Pledge to Allegiance and an invocation, and at that point, after the Pledge of Allegiance, everyone bowed their heads and kind of clasped their hands, and while they were standing, and a preacher or a reverend came up to the front and said a prayer that used the name Jesus, and I was just utterly shocked. I had come from the big city where this kind of thing didn't happen.
Where are you from?
I'm from Southern California, from Los Angeles originally.
Uh-huh. And tell us a little bit more about Grand Junction. How big is it?
Grand Junction probably has a population of about 60,000 now proper, and our county a population of around 180,000.
That's southwest? It's down by New Mexico, is it?
It's right in the middle of a midline between north and south, right next to Utah. We're about 30 miles from the Utah border.
I
often like to say we have more in common with Utah than we do with the rest of Colorado.
And so you are the person who sort of started this whole campaign, is that right? Because you happened to go
No, I started the group, Western Colorado Atheists and Freethinkers, and we were getting good membership pretty early on. It's amazing how once you step out and say you're an atheist and start seeking out other atheists, how many people come on board and join you. But one of our members who attended meetings worked for the county or works for the county, and as part of her job, she was required to attend county commissioner meetings and city council meetings, mostly dealing with getting grants. And she was constantly put in this position of having to stand up and bow her head, because she was in a position of asking for grants from these entities and didn't want to offend them. But she was, in the meantime, being offended by being put in this church-like atmosphere at a public hearing. So she was the one who asked our group to work on the issue of separation of church and state and trying to stop the prayers to Jesus in the public meetings here. And it turned out to be a hornet's nest, but we're not letting go. We're still working on it.
No, the foundation and working with our local members in Grand Junction just put up a red, white, and blue billboard as a message to City Hall and County Hall, you know, that says keep religion out of government. And it's getting some publicity, which is nice. And we wish we could have played the TV coverage, but the TV station actually literally lost it in a website changeover. But
do we have a picture in the newspaper? In our
yeah.
Paper?
But do you think that's helping? Is it raising more consciousness?
Well, it's brought the issue back to the forefront. However briefly, it forced public officials to respond to it again and to realize it's still on their plate. They've done everything they could to make it go away. They've tried to fudge the county has tried to manipulate when they start the meeting, ostensibly to exclude the prayers, although they still say them at 9 o'clock sharp. But they bang the gavel after the prayers now and say it's not part of the meeting. That's kind of an end run around fixing the problem. And the city has finagled a prayer policy. They never had a prayer policy before, but they had their city lawyer cook one up that was to their liking that kind of enshrines the Christian prayers. They have said that they refuse to tell people what they can and can't say before the prayers. We had asked them to alert people who come to say the invocation that they aren't supposed to say the name of a specific deity, but they refuse to do that. But in doing that, they've in fact opened the prayer up to, or the invocation up to anyone, absolutely anyone, not just a church group. It can be individuals. It can be people who are not from a religious group.
What about non-religious?
You can get on their list. Whether you get chosen is another matter. The statistics are stacked against it. They now have about 190 organizations or people on their list from which they choose a handful of folks to invite every quarter. Only of that 190 people and places on the list, only about 8 or 9 are non-Christian-based organizations. So the statistics are stacked against us. But we're trying to get more people to put their name in the hat, and we hope to get somebody to go up and say, you know, some type of egregious maybe invocation that the commissioners will start, it'll make them, or the city council will make them start to rethink their policy.
Now, my memory is that the city had moved a little bit on this, and then they went back to more Jesus prayers. Is that right?
Right. Well, they invited us to talk to them about it, to kind of placate us, and then they had their attorney draw up a policy that really opened up the invocation to everyone, which was what we had pressed for. If they weren't willing to do a moment of silence instead of the invocation, we asked that they diversify it and make it an opportunity open to everyone regardless of religious affiliation or any type of status. And they did do that. The problem is that there's a whole sector of churches in town who don't agree with having invocations or prayers at public meetings, and they refuse to get on the list.
Well,
so we're left.
That's good, actually.
It is good, but we're left with evangelical organizations mm-hmm. almost exclusively that do come and continue to even in the face of all this public discussion about how some people are offended, they continue to say the name Jesus. And so we're...
Because Jesus really cares about zoning variances, I'm sure.
And sewer lines. Right. The good news is that if they have an invited invocator who doesn't show up, they go to a moment of silence. And we have increased the number of moments of silence.
Now, the county hasn't budged, though, right?
The county, out of the three commissioners who all used to say the name Jesus at their invocations, two have stopped doing it, and one woman, Janet Rowland, persists in mentioning the name Jesus, saying she doesn't know any other way to pray, and she absolutely has to do it that way.
So you are educating. I mean, the law says non-sectarian prayer, but we have a little bit of a wrinkle in the Tenth Circuit where Colorado is that makes it a little harder to sue over that.
But there's no law that says they have to have a prayer.
Yes.
No, there's no law. It's all something that they've chosen to do themselves. In fact, the county never even had a prayer until 2005 when one of the elected commissioners decided to bring it in.
Now, we only have about half a minute left. Why is this so egregious? Why should public officials not be praying at government meetings? Just in a couple sentences.
Well, what I've pointed out is they wouldn't allow someone to come in before the meeting and advertise Fruit Loops or Viagra or Tupperware. This is another type of advertisement. It's an ad for one type of religion that's preferred over others repeatedly at meetings, and it's something that just shouldn't be done.
Well, thank you, Anne, for speaking out on State Church Separation and for joining us. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Coming up, Ursula K. Le Guin. She'll be receiving the Freedom from Religion Foundation's award at our Seattle convention.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom from Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio. As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and we are very pleased to have as our guest for the second half of the show, Ursula K. Le Guin. Ursula K. Le Guin lives in Oregon, and she's very kindly consented to accept in person the Freedom from Religion Foundation's Emperor Has No Clothes Award and statuette in Seattle at the upcoming convention. She'll be speaking Saturday, November 7th. And sorry if you have not registered with the foundation already. That convention is sold out. But we're all very lucky to have her on the phone with us today.
And Annie Laurie, you said Oregon. But in the West Coast, they say Oregon. There's a city here in Wisconsin called Oregon. Ursula K. Le Guin has published 21 novels, 11 volumes of short stories, 3 collections of essays, 12 books for children, 6 volumes of poetry, 4 of translation, and she's received many awards, the Hugo, I think more than once, the Nebula, National Book Award, the Penn Malamud, etc. Her recent publications include a volume of poetry, Incredible Good Fortune, the novel Lavinia, and an essay collection called Cheek by Jowl. So welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Thank you.
It's a real pleasure to talk with you and a real honor, and we'll be seeing you in a couple of weeks in Seattle.
Couple of weeks, right.
Are you going to ride the train up? Or?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
That should be fun.
Well, we're all looking forward to this very much, and, you know, everybody has read you. You're such a classic. Your gender bender book, The Left Hand of Darkness, The Dispossessed, just your output is amazing. And now, do you have a new children's book coming out?
Well, actually, one just came out.
Oh, it just came out.
Called Cat Dreams.
Cat Dreams?
It's a book for little kids, you know. Almost a baby book. I've never done that before, so it was kind of fun.
So cats dream, huh?
Yes, they do.
Sure they do.
They don't dream like in the Lathe of Heaven, though, do they?
No.
I just finished that book, and it was really mind-boggling, Well, I won't give the story away, but the dreaming that's in that book, pretty amazing. But
it's sort of if your dreams came true. Yeah,
which we would hope not for most people.
Yeah, exactly.
So we read something, I guess a couple years ago, where you were very forthcoming about your non-belief. And, you know, our Emperor Has No Clothes Award is given to public figures who are very candid and frank about their lack of religion, you know, whether they're overly critical or not. But you've been a non-believer for what, for how long, your whole life or for recent? Or?
Yeah, I once when I was writing an introduction to a Mark Twain piece, I wrote that one reason I loved Mark Twain was that I was brought up as irreligious as a jackrabbit. And so Mark Twain's problems with religion, you know, what's all the fuss about, you know?
Yeah, and what? And he wrote in California his first things about the frogs and the Calaveras County.
The jumping frog, yes, and the one about the blue jay trying to fill a house with acorns, yeah. Well, I do love Mark Twain, but anyway, he kind of took on religion. I haven't done that. I just avoided it.
But it's pretty obvious in your writings, though, that you're knowledgeable about religion and have something to say about it.
So. Yeah, and there are spiritual beliefs and practices that I'm completely happy and compatible with. You know, it's just, it's organized religion and religion as it begins to interfere with the state that begin to raise my hackles.
You quote the Tao Te Ching a lot in The Lathe of Heaven. In fact, you translate...
I did a version of the Tao Te Ching, yeah, I did. Which takes a lot of nerve from somebody who doesn't know Chinese. but there's so many translations, and I worked with a Chinese scholar. And actually, there's just been they've just reprinted that little book, and I'm really glad to see it back in print.
And most of that just seems like just practical morality is what it is.
Yeah, it's got a spiritual side. It goes really deep. It is very practical, and a lot of it has to do with how to run the government, which he says, like Jefferson, you know, the less the better. He says running a big country is like cooking a small fish. Kind of do it very lightly.
Well, and I also notice in there that one of the characters in The Lathe of Heaven, I won't say who it was because it might give it away, but quotes the Golden Rule, but not the New Testament Jesus version of the Golden Rule, but the more Confucius version of it, which says, don't do unto others that which you would not have them do unto you, which seems to be more important to morality than do unto others.
Well, it kind of comes out, I think, whether you say it positively or negatively, I think it does eventually mean the same thing. But I kind of like that Chinese version with its idea of control and restraint. You know, don't inflict on others what you don't want inflicted on you.
Now, Ursula, you said you came from, your family just wasn't religious. You were just brought up without religion. Is that right?
Absolutely.
And where did you grow up?
In Berkeley, California. Home of irreligiosity.
Well, that explains a lot.
And my father was an anthropology professor. In fact, he was one of the first anthropology professors. And so... And he came from, he went to the Ethical Culture School in New York, you know, so this goes back a ways in my family.
In your family. And now what about, I mean, what I connect you with and have ever since the 60s is feminism.
Yeah.
I mean,
ever since feminism got kind of reborn.
Right. Yeah. I mean, your works are gender bending and asking people to rethink their ideas about men and women and how society runs, and you're sort of a trailblazer, and that remains an interest of yours, doesn't it?
Oh, goodness, yes.
Been a theme in your works.
Yeah.
Well, yes. Tell us more about your, you know, what made you such, I think that was so important to write about.
Well, being a woman, to bring to one's attention that women don't always get a fair shake. And here's one of the places where I have specific objections to a good deal of organized religion, because all of them that I know very much about seem to favor men very much over women. And, of course, some of them have a male deity. And that the whole thing is so sort of gendered that it makes me extremely uncomfortable. So I just, if it itches, I scratch.
I think
my scratching comes out in the form of novels and short stories.
Well, that's wonderful scratching. Mary Daly said, as long as God is male, male is God.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there that same glass ceiling in the science fiction industry?
When I started writing science fiction, which, was decades and decades ago, it was all men, and it was kind of assumed that all the readers were men, which was not true, by the way, but that was the assumption. And so all the characters tended to be men. Or there was the girl who said, "Oh, Captain, tell me how it works," But with my generation and just a little after, a lot of women began kind of moving out into the open, not using pen names. And there were some very good women editors in the field who had quietly taken over editorial positions. And so I think it was partly due to them that some of us earlier woman science fiction writers got published, because they had no prejudices, of course.
Well, and the writing is good. The writing is amazing.
Well,
so, I mean,
the writing needed some improvement when I got into science fiction. There were a few very good writers, but there was a lot of real careless, schlocky writing.
Yeah.
That nothing mattered but the plot, and so on. And I can't read that stuff.
Now, Ursula,
I can't write it.
What term do you prefer? Do you consider yourself a science fiction writer, fantasy? Do you use both?
I'm a novelist and poet, is what I would like to call myself. But I've written a great deal of science fiction and fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also written realism and magical realism. And I never wrote a Western or a mystery yet. But there's time.
There's time for that. Well, we'll have time to talk a little more with you after this break. So listeners, stay tuned for more with Ursula K. Le Guin. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio, and we'll be right back.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. It ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Next week, our guest will be Donald C. Johansson, the discoverer of Lucy. And we're going to find out why Professor Johansson is an atheist and just how he feels about Lucy being recently displaced by RD.
And we're so pleased to have with us today Ursula K. Le Guin, winner of many literary honors, who has made the world think. And Ursula, let's talk about your latest book for adults, Lavinia.
Okay.
Well, you said that it just came out during the break. You told me it just came out in England to good reviews. And briefly, what is that about?
It's about a character in Virgil's epic poem, The Aeneid, who doesn't get much space in his poem. She's a princess who marries the hero. And I got interested in her, and so I kind of wrote Virgil's story. I don't change the story at all, but I wrote it from her point of view.
Oh, sounds great.
Well, it was an awful lot of fun. It's a good story.
Because these epics are all kind of male-dominated epics, aren't they?
Oh, goodness, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what were the women thinking?
Oh, yes. But, of course, in Homer, you get people like Penelope. Odysseus' wife, who is a fascinating character, and a lot, we know a lot about her. Margaret Atwood just wrote a book from her point of view, but that Margaret's book is kind of kind of feminist, and actually my Lavinia is not actively feminist that way.
You tried to keep her in character?
I wanted to know what this girl thought, you know. I'm sorry?
You tried to kind of keep her in the character of the original.
Well, she has no character in the original. She's blonde. That's about all you know about her. She blushes.
Well, I have to read this book.
Yeah, my girl isn't even blonde. She's South Italian. How could she be blonde? You know?
Now, of all your books, and maybe this isn't a fair question, do you have favorites?
No.
No. So that's like having a favorite grandchild.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we were talking about you have grandchildren. You have, two daughters and a son and grandchildren?
I've got 3 grandkids here in Portland and a 25-year-old one in Toronto.
But your fans have favorites. I can't decide between Dispossessed or Left Hand of Darkness. You know,
those are still, of course. I tell you, my favorite books, in a way, at the moment, are the more recent ones, which you know, people always want me to talk about the old ones.
Yeah,
and it's something I wrote 35 years ago.
You've moved on, huh?
Well, my mind isn't quite there anymore. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, but right. It does show that the cream rises to the top. Good literature will stay up there for.
It's new.
Yeah.
It's when people read it, even 30, 35 years later,
new. It's new to us when we read it, of course.
Yeah.
For the
and
first
that's, that, of course, I feel that way, too. And I love to reread books that I read 30 years ago, you know, and find they're just as good myself.
I want to read a sentence out of The Lathe of Heaven that I think only a free thinker would put in a book. You were talking about Mark Twain, how he put these comments in his writings, but... these two guys are talking, and one guy says, "All the time and energy humans have wasted on trying to find religious solutions to suffering, and then you come along and make Buddha and Jesus and the rest of them look like the fakers they were." Now, I'm sure that was the character's viewpoint, but maybe that was also a little bit of the author's point of view.
No, I would never call Buddha a faker.
No?
That's definitely a character speaking.
But maybe Jesus, huh?
I don't feel we know very much about him.
No, we don't, do we?
But still, the fact that you can be frank enough to include lines like that in a book, they're very critical of religion, which is nice. It's nice to read that.
Good.
Now, for a celebrity, you are amazingly easygoing. You answer your own phone. You often answer your own email. It must be, you must get a lot of demands on you. What is that like?
It's demanding, it is. And as I get older, it gets a little harder to do, so that I may eventually have to stop answering mail.
Uh-huh.
Because it does take an awful lot of time.
You so must.
I just dread the letters, you know.
Right.
But they're so nice. People who read your books, they read them so intelligently. You want to converse with them, you know.
Well, that is a very nice attitude by a famous author. And you're very nice. You have consented to do a book signing after your acceptance speech at the convention of the Freedom from Religion Foundation.
That's what I like least, I'll confess to you.
Oh, but we're going to limit it to one book, right? Or two. One. Or
one.
Two.
Yeah.
One
no,
book.
It's only one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our hearts
so,
are
otherwise
stone.
Otherwise, people come with piles of them.
Right. And that's,
I write too much.
Right. And that's very taxing. But so do you have any, you have other current projects. What are they?
I never talk about what I'm doing.
Oh, okay.
It's a deep, dark secret, sometimes from me, too. Okay. So I find out what it is I'm doing.
Maybe it's kind of like non-superstitiously jinxing you, huh? Like if it doesn't really
just,
come to
it's
happen.
It's just something I can't do. Some people can, they love to talk about their work while they're doing it, some artists, and others just can't. It just has to be between me and the work, you know? Until I can show it to people.
But your website says you've got a lot of other projects.
Well,
going.
Let's let her keep it to herself. All right. All right. And what is her website?
Yes, what is your website?
It's UrsulaKLeGuin.com. And my web mistress is Vonda McIntyre, whom some of you will know, is a very, very good writer herself. And she runs me a beautiful website, we think.
It is beautiful. And there's a lot of depth. There's so much you can find out about your books and about you.
Mm-hmm.
And
we have a wonderful owl. If you go to Lavinia, you will find the most beautiful owl you ever saw.
Owl, okay.
Uh-huh. A photograph of an owl. That's because of something that happens in the book. Owls are important.
An owl is a predator with those two eyes close together like that.
Oh, they sure are. They're very successful predators. Yeah.
We just had our pet bird die this week, a cockatiel, and you can tell because the eyes are spread by the side of their head that it's a prey. It's not a predator. But those owls can be very scary looking. Or very friendly. Are we out of time?
We are out of time. And, well, thank you so much. And we are just can't wait to meet you in person and really appreciate your joining us today.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Okay. Well, bye.
We've been talking with Ursula K. Le Guin, the famous novelist and poet. Go to ffrf.org/radio to hear all of these archived or to sign up for the podcast.
And we want to say good luck to Dan Ginsberg having surgery today. If our usual engineer, if you are interested in more information, go to 1-800-335-4021, ffrf.org. Ask for more information. Tune in next week for more Blasphemous Broadcasting, Rational Radio, and Donald C. Johansson.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday